Welcome to Take Note on WPSU. I'm Ann Danahy. An atmospheric scientist and evangelical Christian, Catherine Hayhoe is known for her ability to communicate science to everyday people, including skeptics of climate change. She's an award-winning professor at Texas Tech University and is involved in a number of educational initiatives, including hosting Global Weirding, a public media program on YouTube. Catherine Hayhoe joins us in our studio. Catherine Hayhoe, thank you for coming in to talk with us.
Thank you for having me.
We're recording this close to Thanksgiving, and central Pennsylvania has been hit with a lot of snow, which is a little bit unusual for this time of year. So I thought it might be fun to start with a clip from you talking about snow in relation to climate science.
Can you believe that warmer temperatures can actually increase the amount of snow that falls sometimes? That's right. As temperature warms, the air can hold more water vapor. When a storm comes along, there's more of it for that storm to sweep up and dump on us. If it's cold enough, all that water falls as, you guessed it, snow. And some of the biggest increases in heavy precipitation that we've seen the last few decades have been on the East Coast. So ironically, some of the very storms that the pundits and politicians have used to argue that the planet isn't warming are actually consistent with the fact that it is.
So that's from your show, online show, Global Weirding. Tell us a little bit more about that. Explain the science behind that.
That is from our show, and you can just find it on YouTube. They're short little episodes, about 6 or 7 minutes long, that all begin with a frequently asked question. And between the months of November and April, one of the most frequently asked questions is, it's cold outside, where's global warming now? As if somehow we forgot there's this thing called winter that happens, not because of global warming or lack thereof, but because of the way the Earth is tilted, 23.5 degrees, as it rotates around the sun. So the reality is that we still have seasons, but every season is getting warmer. And in fact, winter is warming faster than most other seasons, especially in this part of the country. So yes, it's still cold. Yes, we still get snow. But ironically, the warmer it gets, the more water vapor the air can hold. And when it's below freezing, that means that we can even get heavier snowfalls today than we would 50 or 100 years ago, which is kind of crazy and counterintuitive. And that's why scientifically we refer to this issue as climate change, because there's all kinds of changes that we're seeing. And informally, I like to call it global weirding, like the name of our show, because it just things are happening that we look at them, we think that's just weird.
So it's not inconsistent to look out the window and see lots of snow.
No, it isn't. And of course, also, we have natural variability. You know, one year's a bit warmer, one year's a bit colder, one year we get a storm early, another year we don't get it till really late. That's part of our natural weather patterns, too. But when we look over decades, 2 to 3 decades or more, we see that, yes, indeed, the planet is steadily warming. The United States is as well. And it is the result of human activities.
So you're recognized for your ability to use a combination of analogies, stories, and facts. And we've already gotten a little bit of that when talking about climate change. And I understand that that started in part with your husband. And he is also someone who has a PhD, but in a different area. And it wasn't until after you were married that you found out that you were not on the same page when it came to climate science, that he thought the idea of global warming or climate change was a hoax. And that over time, though, he came to see that as the truth by looking at these data and the statistics of that. Mm-hmm. So what was that like for you?
Well, as a Canadian moving to the U.S., I sort of vaguely knew there were people out there who didn't think the climate was changing, but I had never met any, and I certainly didn't think that somebody as smart as my husband would be somebody who didn't agree with the science. But he came from the South, and he had never met anybody who he respected, and especially somebody who shared his faith, who did think that it was real. So he had never heard otherwise. Now, fortunately, as academics, we tend to share a very specific value, which is that we value information and facts. So through talking through the information, through going to NASA's website, through looking at temperature data, through saying, yeah, you know, it really is going up, looking at the fact that volcanoes only produce a tiny fraction of the heat-trapping gases that humans produce, so it can't be volcanoes, and look at the sun's energy. The sun's energy is actually going down right now, not up. Through looking at that information and through recognizing that the number that a thermometer gives us is not inherently liberal or conservative. It doesn't give you a different number depending on how you vote. We were able, slowly and gradually, you know, we didn't get into this every day, but we were able to slowly come to agreement on this, that yes, it really is humans that are causing this, and the impacts are serious, and it is something not only that isn't and shouldn't be political, but in fact, it's something that people with our set of values that we believe as Christians that we are to care for others who have less than we do, who are less fortunate than we do. We are the very people who should be caring most about this, because climate change disproportionately affects the poorest and most vulnerable people in the world, from those living right here in our own communities to people on the other side of the world.
Why do you think there is so much skepticism, especially among the religious?
It's been deliberately fostered. We've been told that we can't be the person that we are and agree that climate is changing due to human activities. Because for many people, unfortunately, their statement of faith is being written, first of all, by their political ideology today, and only second of all, by what the Bible says. And so people throw up religiously sounding smoke screens all the time, you know, things like, well, you know, if God is in control, this could never happen. Or, you know, God said there would always be seasons. And of course, there will always be seasons. They'll just all be warmer. Or, you know, the world's going to end anyways. And these are what I call smoke screens, because they don't actually come from what's in the Bible. If you look at the Bible, in Genesis, it says God gave humans responsibility or dominion over this earth. So God put humans in charge, however you interpret that. And then in the very last book in the Bible, Revelation, it says God will destroy those who destroy the earth. So clearly there's, you know, God feels strongly about people and when and how they treat the earth. And in between the front and the back of the Bible, there are all these verses about how God cares for creation, even the smallest, most apparently insignificant aspect of it. There's a lot about how we should be caring for and loving other people, which includes caring for their physical needs. So whenever anybody says, oh, you know, I don't think that a Christian could believe that climate change is real, my answer is, I don't believe it is either. I look at the data and the facts using the brain that God gave me, and it is very clear, not just from thermometers or ocean buoys or satellites, it's clear from over 26,500 natural thermometers. When the trees flower in our backyard, what types of animals and insects and birds we see and when they migrate, how sea level is rising and glaciers are melting. There's 26,500 indicators that, yes, the planet is warming.
One of the other arguments on the other side is, sure, there's climate change, and that's what happens over time. It changes, and it might enter a warming period, and it might enter a cooling period, but that doesn't necessarily mean that it's man-made.
Oh, yes. That's probably the most frequent question I get. And so we have a global weirding episode called It's Just a Natural Cycle, Isn't It? And what that episode explains is that we climate scientists actually study the natural causes of climate change. In fact, that's originally what climate scientists did. And honestly, I think if you added up how much time and effort we spend looking at the human impact on climate versus the natural, I would venture to guess that we spend at least half and possibly more of our time studying natural climate change, because it's much more complex and, frankly, more scientifically interesting.
So it's just the human that gets all the media attention or is in the spotlight more than the kind of drier behind-the-scenes research that's going on.
Yeah, like if you're doing, you know, a study on the internal natural variability of the climate system, it doesn't typically make headlines. But in reality, we study all the natural causes. And because we study the natural causes, when we see our temperatures warming relatively abruptly, faster than any time in the history of human civilization, the first thing we do is we don't automatically jump on the human bandwagon. We say, could it be something that we've seen before? Could it be a natural cause? Could it be the sun? It can't be, because the sun's energy has been going down since the 1970s. So according to the sun, we should be getting cooler right now, not warmer. Could it be volcanoes? People often say, oh, one volcanic eruption produces 100 times more than all the humans on the planet. That's totally false. In fact, volcanic eruptions cool the earth. They don't warm it, because they produce a lot of particles that kind of act like an umbrella, reflecting the sun's energy back to space.
Interesting. Another thing that might be counterintuitive.
Yeah, exactly. Now, geologic activity does leak a little bit of heat-trapping gases into the atmosphere, but it's a tiny fraction of what humans produce.
But you're spending your time looking at what's happening naturally before going and saying, okay, are humans a part of this? What's going on over there?
Exactly.
So the two things can happen simultaneously.
They can, and we have to do that. We have to look at these things first, because because it's as if you were running kind of a low-grade fever, but it kind of started to climb week after week, and you went to the doctor. Imagine if the doctor took one look at you and said, "It's Ebola." You'd be like, "What are you talking about?" It could be food poisoning. It could be the flu. It could be, heaven forbid, cancer. But like, why jump to the Ebola when there's a lot of natural causes? So we look at natural cycles. We know that internal natural cycles like El Nino just redistribute heat. They can't create it and make the whole planet warm. And we know that according to orbital cycles that bring the ice ages, we actually are warming after the last ice age peaked about 6,000 to 8,000 years ago. And since then, we were gradually, slowly cooling until the Industrial Revolution. So after we've looked at all these natural causes, then we can say it can't be them, because according to all these natural factors, we should be getting cooler, and we're not. There has to be something else.
You and your husband actually wrote a book, A Climate for Change, Global Warming Facts for Faith-Based Decisions. What facts and stories and anecdotes do you find effective when talking to people who are Christian and maybe skeptical of climate science?
Well, a lot of people I speak to are doubtful, and it isn't necessarily always because they're Christian. It's typically more because they're conservative. And unfortunately, climate change has become one of the most politically polarized issues in the whole U.S., where the simple facts that climate is changing and humans are responsible, the number one predictor of whether we agree is simply where we fall on the political spectrum. But regardless of where we fall, we're all human. And the most effective thing to do when we're talking with anyone is to, first of all, bond over genuinely shared values. So figure out what is it that makes them tick, whether it's Uncle Joe or Aunt May or, you know, my colleague or my college roommate or brother-in-law or whatever. What makes them tick? And then often, more often than not, we can connect the dots between climate change and something they already care about. It isn't a case of turning people into a different person or making, you know, instilling new values into them, because good luck at doing that. It's a case of figuring out where people are at and then simply connecting the dots and saying, well, because you are this type of person, so for example, because you are a Christian and you believe that God has given us responsibility over this planet, and because you believe that God wants us to care for those less fortunate than us, did you know that you're the perfect person to care about a changing climate? In fact, if you really believe what you say you do, you are the person who should be out at the front of the line saying, we need to fix this problem because it is affecting God's creation, and even more importantly, it is affecting our brothers and sisters around the world. So we're showing people how they already are the person to care. They just haven't connected the dots.
And it's affecting people from poorer countries more so, that they're going to get harder hit by it.
Oh, yeah, definitely. I mean, when you look at northern countries like Canada or Finland, even if climate change continues for the rest of the century, they're looking at very small decreases in their overall GDP. There will be other impacts like invasive species and things like that, and, you know, heavy rainfalls. But overall, the effects for the more northern countries would be relatively minor compared to the effects that we expect for countries in Southeast Asia and Africa, where they could easily lose a quarter or more of their GDP. And you can just imagine how much suffering that will cause when people are already living on less than a dollar or two a day. When the crop fails, they don't have crop insurance. They don't have a safety net in the bank. They can't feed their family. We're talking about devastation and suffering. That's why I care.
In the United States, we've been experiencing some crazy weather, too. I'm thinking about the fires in California, the hurricanes that we're seeing. Are you finding, when you talk to people, that more people are coming on board with the idea that climate science is a factor in these weather patterns?
Many more people are recognizing that something's different today. So I would say that there's many more people asking questions and actually interested today than there was 10 years ago. Because the biggest problem we have when it comes to climate change isn't people who reject the science. I know that's what makes the headlines. But the biggest problem we have is that whether we accept the science or not, hardly anybody thinks it matters to us personally. Hardly anyone.
And what can I do about it anyway?
Yeah, exactly. So if the impacts don't matter to me personally and there's nothing I can do anyways, why would I talk about it? Why would I care about it? Why would I vote about it? The main problem is we don't think it matters, but that's starting to change because we're seeing events that, you know, we've always had hurricanes, we've always had wildfires, we've always had droughts and heavy rain events. That's a normal part of life on this planet. But we're starting to see events that we say, wow, that is a lot stronger, a lot bigger, a lot worse than we've ever seen. And simultaneously, in the field of climate science, one of the places that we've learned the most in the last few years is in a field called attribution. And specifically, we're starting to be able to look at an individual event like Hurricane Harvey and say, what percent of that event was exacerbated or amplified by climate change?
Before, scientists wouldn't be willing to say that this specific event was caused by climate change. It was more a larger weather pattern that we're, or larger patterns that we're seeing that are changing over time. But now you're saying that's starting to shift?
Well, no, not exactly.
Okay.
So the question people always have is, was this event caused by climate change or not? So either it's binary. Was it zero or was it one? So either 100% natural or 100% climate change. But that's kind of like saying, well, was my heart attack caused by genetics or lifestyle? The answer is always, you know, a bit of both. Like for one person, it might be more genetics, less lifestyle. For another, it might be more lifestyle, less genetics. But we know it's a combination of both. So hurricanes always happen naturally. But if Hurricane Harvey had happened 100 years ago, it would have had about 40% less rain associated with it. If the terrible, devastating fires in California had happened 100 years ago, which California has a long history of fire, that's just the ecosystem it has, it wouldn't have burned as large an area because it wouldn't have been as hot and dry. And this is really important, it wouldn't have caused near as much damages and devastation and death because we didn't have as many people or as much infrastructure 100 years ago. So the fact that climate change is hitting us hard right now is a function of three things. It's a function of the fact that there's more people, there's more infrastructure and things that we value at risk, and of course, we see that climate change is loading the dice against us.
Is it frustrating for you to see issues like this when politics gets mixed into them? And the fires going on in California are a perfect example of that. President Trump actually tweeted out that he said poor forest management is part of what's to blame here. And then all of a sudden, if you start trying to talk about climate change with it, it becomes very political.
Oh, yes, yes. It is so frustrating as a scientist because as soon as you see that, you say, well, A, California only actually controls a small fraction, less than 10% of its own forests. The vast majority are federal land, number one. Number two, it wasn't even a fire in the forest. It was in the shrubland and the vegetation along the coast. So forest management wouldn't even really help. And in fact, forest management has cut the number of wildfires in the West in half in the last few decades. It isn't a case of the number changing. They're burning bigger area because they're stronger. So it is very frustrating. And at first, again, I was completely unaware of the fact that this was so politicized. And so when I first moved to Texas Tech University more than 10 years ago, a colleague that first year asked me to guest teach a geology class for him. So I said, sure, I want to be a good colleague. So I show up at this geology class. It's first thing in the morning. It's in one of those big cavernous lecture halls. It's dark. The students are all just kind of slumped over, dozing or looking at their phones. But I want to give them a good lecture. So I was talking about the history of the carbon cycle through geologic time. So I started, you know, billions of years ago, and then I walked through millions of years ago, and then I took us up to the present day. And then just to close, I mentioned the fact that now the natural carbon cycle is being disrupted by human emissions, by digging up and burning fossil fuels. So at the end, I stopped and I hopefully asked if there was any questions. And one hand in the middle of that giant lecture hall popped up and I said, yes, he has a question. What is it? This boy stood up and he looked at me and in a very aggressive tone, he just said, "You're a Democrat, aren't you?" I said, "What are you talking about? I'm Canadian." But that was my baptism into fire, into what's become a reality of life. That today, whether we agree climate is changing and humans are responsible, is simply a factor of where we fall in the political spectrum. And it shouldn't be that way. Because gravity doesn't care if we're conservative or liberal. You step off the cliff, you're going down. Climate doesn't care whether we believe it's changing or not. It is changing. It is us. And the risks are serious unless we act now.
How did you respond to the student?
I basically said no, and I gave him a look like, what planet are you from?
pull out that you're Canadian, so you're not involved in American politics.
Deliberately so, yes.
Right. If you're just joining us, I'm Ann Danahy. This is WPSU's Take Note. We're talking with atmospheric scientist and evangelical Christian Catherine Hayhoe. In one interview you did in 2014, you said, "The more time that passes without doing anything enormously large to solve this problem, the more concerned I get." And that was in 2014. What are the things you think the United States and other countries should be doing? And when do we reach the point when it's too late?
Oh, yeah. I mean, it's gotten to the point now where The Onion reads more like real news than the real news does. There was an Onion article kind of satirizing the release of a new scientific report. And it said that in the middle of announcing the release of this report, the scientists just folded it all up, said, oh, heck, might as well eat, drink, and be merry for tomorrow we die anyways. We're going off to the bar to drown our sorrows and our anxieties.
Right.
Who's with me?
What's the point?
Yeah, exactly. So we've known for over 150 years that digging up and burning coal and gas and oil is wrapping an extra blanket around our planet that is causing the planet to warm. It's been more than 50 years since U.S. scientists were sure enough that it's real, it's us, and the impacts are serious to officially warn a U.S. president, and that was Lyndon B. Johnson. So it isn't a case of we need more information to act. We've known for long enough that it's real, it's serious, and we have to act now. That's not what's holding us back. What's holding us back is when the vested interests in the world realized, wow, acting on climate change means weaning ourselves off fossil fuels, which we've been using for energy for over 300 years. And if you go to Wikipedia and you look at the 10 richest corporations in the entire world, 8 out of 10 of those corporations have made their money primarily, and in many cases solely, off either the extraction or the use through car companies of fossil fuels. Aside from those 8, you have Walmart, which is planning to be 50% clean energy by 2025. And then you have Berkshire Hathaway, which is partly fossil fuels, I'm sure.
Investment company.
Exactly. And then at number 11, you have Apple, which is already 100% clean energy. So the fact that the wealth in our world is disproportionately concentrated on these old dirty sources of energy that we've been using for hundreds of years is a huge part of the reason why people are dragging their feet, because they can afford to spend what's pocket change to them to feed these organizations to attack climate scientists. And Michael Mann, who's a scientist right here at Penn State, is one of those who has been attacked more than almost anybody else. And he has been done so by people in the pay of these industries, including the fossil fuel industry and the Koch brothers, who have every vested interest in maintaining the status quo as long as possible because they can make an extra who knows how many billion dollars for every single year that goes by without a price on carbon. It's been over 20 years since we have known that just from the health perspective alone, from the air and water pollution that coal use causes, we shouldn't even be using coal. So why are we still using it? It's because the people who make the profits are not the people who bear the costs. The use of coal, the coal industry, has been dropping for 30 years. There isn't a war on coal. It's just that it's a very inefficient, dirty, and frankly, outdated way to get energy. We've been using it for hundreds of years. Try to think of another piece of technology that we've been using for 300 years. There really isn't one. I mean, imagine if we were still using passenger pigeons back, you know, to communicate instead of cell phones. So why are we still using these things? It's because there's significant vested interest in maintaining them. But today we already do have ways to get energy that are clean, that do not produce air pollution, water pollution, or carbon dioxide. In many parts of the country, including where I live in Texas, wind and solar energy is not cheaper than coal. It's even cheaper than natural gas most of the time, too.
Wow.
For 4 years now, installations of clean, renewable energy around the world have exceeded new fossil fuel installations. And many of these are happening in places where people don't have access to fossil fuels, like sub-Saharan Africa, but they have a lot of sun and they have a lot of wind. But at the same time, though, we need to be recognizing that a lot of communities, especially here in Pennsylvania, West Virginia, Utah, Wyoming, communities depend on coal to support their jobs, their families, their industry, their economy. So that's why I'm so excited when I hear about stories like a Chinese wind company. And honestly, why Chinese? Why not American? But a Chinese wind company going into Wyoming and offering free retraining for coal miners to work in the wind energy industry. I love the organization Iron to Earth in Canada, which is a grassroots organization started by people who work in the oil and gas industry in Canada, retraining people to use their skill set to do clean energy instead. In San Antonio, there's a solar manufacturing company that took in oil and gas workers who lost their jobs when the boom-bust cycle of the oil prices in Texas. They lost their jobs. They got taken in by this company in San Antonio and retrained to do solar panel manufacturing. We need to be thinking about taking care of people whose jobs are already going away, not by continuing to invest in the coal industry, because that's like investing in the horse and buggy industry. when Henry Ford's already turning out the Model T Ford, but taking care of them and providing them with ways that they can continue to support their family.
So other people have observed this, but you remain very positive and upbeat about this when, for a lot of people, it can be a discouraging issue to discuss. Is there a secret to that for you?
There absolutely is a secret, and I can tell you what it is. Hope is not a passive emotion. If we just sit there waiting for hopeful news to come to us, it won't. When I look at the science, I mean, every new study that comes out, it feels like it's worse or it's bigger than we thought. When I look at the news, every story we read in the news is depressing or horrible about, you know, who said that or what happened here. But we need hope, because without hope, it's going to be a self-fulfilling prophecy of doom. This thing is not going to be fixed overnight. We need long-term sustained action. And the only thing that sustains long-term action is hope, hope of a better future. So we have to go out and we have to look for hope. And where do we find it? It is there. We find hope in looking for those small good news stories. We can find them in the news when we look for them. We can find them in what other people are doing. We can find them when we join an organization and we hear about all the incredible things that's happening. So on my Facebook page, I often share hopeful stories. Like, did you know that Indian coal companies are switching to start investing more in solar energy? Did you know that the Museum of Coal Mining in Kentucky put solar panels on the roof? Did you know that in Texas, the biggest army base in the whole country, which of course is in Texas, they went with wind and solar energy 2 years ago because they would save taxpayers over $150 million in Texas? And so when we hear these stories, first of all, it gives us something positive to talk about. And honestly, the attitudes in our head, the emotions that we have, are a function of what goes in. The input that's going in is what determines how we feel. So if we're always just exposed to and bombarded with negative information, of course we're going to feel negative. And believe me, I have my days, for sure.
Short on social media, too. Definitely.
Oh, all the time.
Yeah.
But if we go out and look for that hope. And so, for example, one group that I serve as scientific advisor is Citizens Climate Lobby. And the reason I do is because they are hundreds of thousands of really deeply committed, passionate, engaged people, not just around the U.S., around the whole world, who work with our elected officials at every level and every part of the spectrum. You know, honestly, for some people, the more conservative, the better. You can make the biggest changes. And it's just so encouraging for me to see what they're doing, to hear their stories of what, you know, one individual conversation did. And then I really like connecting to organizations, too, that share many of my values. So, you know, the Evangelical Environmental Network goes around talking to people about Christian values and how they connect to climate change and environmental issues as well. I'm a skier, and so I'm really excited that there's an organization called Protect Our Snow that many Olympic athletes have joined, about protecting winter. Whoever you are, wherever you are, whether you're a parent, there's Moms Clean Air Force, whether you are a birder or a hiker, whether you care about the military and national security, whether you care about businesses, whoever you are, there are organizations that share your values, that care passionately about this issue. And by surrounding ourselves with like-minded people, by regularly exposing ourselves to things people are doing, that's where we find hope.
Catherine Hayhoe, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you for having me.
We've been talking with Catherine Hayhoe, an atmospheric scientist at Texas Tech University. Hayhoe is an evangelical Christian who says addressing climate change is in step with being Christian. To hear this and other episodes of Take Note, go to wpsu.org/radio. I'm Ann Danahy, WPSU.